goals difficulty, this is because challenging goals tend to catch our attention and thereby helping focus. So when it's challenging, it grabs our attention. We want to showcase our contribution towards the challenge. Difficult goals energize as hard work is required to attain them. So there's a difference between challenging and difficulty. Okay, so challenging goals tend to catch our attention. They become very popular and thereby they help you to move focus. Difficult goals help us to lead into more hard work because then it energizes us saying that, you know, okay, today I'm putting 8 hours, tomorrow I have to put actually 9 hours to be able to crack this, right? So difficult goals results in higher persistence to achieve them, whereas challenging goals drive to find strategies that could help perform more effectively. So one improves your persistency, one improves your effectiveness. So goal setting theory, besides feedback, three other factors that moderate the goals. Performance relationships, goal commitment, task characteristics, and national culture. So what do you mean by goal commitment now? So though the reaction towards performance of a goal may vary whether the individual had participated in the goal setting or not. As I mentioned to you, your manager involved you in setting your goals for the year. So the reaction towards the performance of a goal may completely vary from one person to the other whether he participated in the goal setting process or not. Goal setting theory assumes an individual is committed to the goal and determined not to lower or abandon it. The individual believes he or she can achieve the goal and wants to achieve it. Okay, so he believes he can achieve the goal, and second is he wants to achieve it. One is that your belief and your intrinsic motivation says that yes, it's achievable. And the second one is that it's achievable, but I'm not willing to do it. I am not willing to put that kind of a effort. So versus I want to achieve it. I want to push it forward. I want to achieve it. So there are two things here. The individual's belief that he can achieve the goal, and second is his willingness to achieve it. This was your goal commitment. So goal commitment is also to focus on whether goals are made public. The goals needs to be made public as well. It cannot, otherwise if it's not made public, the people are very, they won't, because it will be very intrinsic in nature. It will not showcase any badge. It will not showcase your campaign. So individual has an internal locus of control and the goals are self-set rather than assigned. As I mentioned to you, if you're part of the process of goal setting, it will definitely be a booster for you. So goals needs to be made public. The individual has to have a control of it. And the third one is they should be self-directed rather than assigned by somebody else. So task characteristics, as we mentioned here, goal commitment we understood, task characteristics. Performance is impacted very strongly by goals themselves in the situation when tasks are not complex and well-learned and independent. Although goal setting has a lot of positive outcomes, sometimes goals can be over-effective also. Okay, so they may be too over-effective that it undermines everybody else. And goals can generate single focus and excluding others. So if it is too high task oriented, it brings the individual in the limelight. Okay, it brings the individual in the limelight. However, the others get excluded from it. If it's a team project, the team leader gets projected very well, but however, the other team members get excluded of it. So hence, you need to be cognizant about the fact that it is, tasks are not that complex and it's well learned and independent as well. Now the third one, which is your national culture. So setting specific, difficult and acceptable goals would mean different in different cultures. So what's different and what's difficult for you may not be difficult for me, right? So hence it's different in different cultures. It is known that group goals are more effective in collectivist culture. If the culture is very collectivist and you do not reward individualism, you reward groupism. So then the organization will always encourage a goal which is more group goal. Okay, and compared to an individualistic culture setup where assigned goals generate greater commitments in high power distance. So if the organization enjoys and celebrates individualism, then you will have to focus on your culture will definitely lead into the individualistic goals. So it depends on the culture that you are subjected to. So this small power distance, big power distance, individualism versus, so this is what Hofstede culture dimension says. In some organization, it celebrates individualism, in some it celebrates collectivism, some celebrates the masculinity, some celebrates the femininity, high uncertainty avoidance, low uncertainty avoidance, long-term orientation, short-term orientation, indulgence versus restraint. Okay, so these are some of the factors that needs to be kept in mind. Self-efficacy theory. This theory is also known as social cognitive theory or social learning theory and was developed by Albert Bandura. So what do you understand by social learning theory? Okay, so when you learn from others, there is a concept called as 70-20-10 principle. I'm sure you all must have come across this at one point in time. 70% of your experience comes from 20% of your 70% of your learning comes from your 20% of your interaction and 10% of your classroom training, right? So that's what it says. So social learning is about what you learn from your experiences, what you learn from your peers, what you learn from your situation. So this is what was coined by Albert Bandura. And self-efficacy means a person's belief about himself being capable of carrying out a task. Okay, whether or not I have the capability to carry out this task successfully. Some people do not even have that confidence. If you do not have, that means your self-efficacy is poor. Self-efficacy creates a positive spiral where high efficacy leads to increased engagement and performance. And in turn, further increases its efficacy. People with high self-efficacy tend to increase effort and motivation, by the way. So people who have high self-efficacy always tend to increase the efforts. They will rigor their inputs. Their lead measures will be strengthened. And post negative feedback, whereas the with low self-efficacy will tend to reduce their effort. The moment they get the feedback, they will get bogged down and they will be like, okay, fine, let me not put in so much of efforts. Why should I put in? So that's the difference between the self-efficacy and the poor self-efficacy people. So this is how it looks like. So when you talk about effectiveness, it's on the y-axis. On the x-axis, you can see high and low. Here you can see inactive self-mastery, failure or success of actual performance, role modeling. Self-efficacy, belief in your capacity to successfully perform a task. This is purely nothing but your self-confidence to be able to accomplish a particular task. Okay, so it will bring in, and how does this come is the virtual, the verbal and the social persuasion and the pep talks that you do, the kind of interaction that you do with people, the physiological cues that you have, somatic or emotional states, the physiological mindset, how your body is able to sustain or not, role modeling, vicarious experiences by observing or visualization only, okay, by inactive self-mastery, which is failure of success or actual performance, okay. So actual performance may differ. You may have, you may have achieved self-mastery on a particular task, but actual performance will depend on both your self-efficacy and your willingness as well, right? So hence, it will depend on 2-3 factors. So hence, the self-efficacy you will acquire self-efficacy when you are able to go through all of this. And that's where your effectiveness goes higher. So here, as we talked about verbal persuasion, this refers to gaining more confidence by others convincing one of possessing skills essential to be successful. Okay, so gaining more confidence by, others have said that, why don't you go for this? Why don't you go for that? I'm sure you'll be able to. That's what is a verbal persuasion. And arousal. This leads to an energized condition in which individual is psyched up and tends to perform better because he has been pushed to such a level that he got almost aroused towards the results. And he says, okay, yes, I'm pumped up now. Now I'm ready to perform. So we spoke about this. It's inactive mastery. It stands for obtaining requisite experience with the task. Previous success in the job drives confidence. Obviously, it will depend on the how you experienced it in the last time when you took up this. So if you have already succeeded, you definitely develop the inactive mastery over a period of time in that particular job. Vicarious modeling, it refers to gaining more confidence as one views others doing the task. Because you visualize it that others are already doing it. You know, you're already able to do it. They're seeing successes around that. Why shouldn't I be able to? So I will probably replicate the same. That is your vicarious, hence it says modeling. Okay, so these are the four ways to increase the self-mastery, inactive mastery, vicarious modeling, and your verbal persuasion and your arousal. The key implications of self-efficacy theory is training programs which use inactive mastery to make individuals practice and develop their skills and abilities. Okay, so there are some skill-based training programs to improve and increase your self-efficacy. So critics of self-efficacy theory believes that intelligent consciousness and emotionally stable people tend to have much higher self-efficacy than others do. So they are correlating completely with the self-efficacy with the people who are intelligent, who are consciousness, who have consciousness in them, and emotionally stable people will always have more chances to be more self-efficacy than probably what others would have. Equity theory. This theory is about equity and motivation and was proposed by J. Stacey Adams. It states that people tend to compare their job rewards with their inputs that they have put in. Okay, so they start finding a ratio about the outcome input ratio, which they assess with respect to similar others in the system. So they compare it with the other jobs that they have done in the past. So what is the input versus the results that they have received? Okay, so if this ratio is equal to that of others, a state of equilibrium is kind of perceived. Okay, but if not, if they feel that others are getting more, other functional department is getting much more compared to the same, for the same job, you know, that has been done. So there is a stress which arises there. Okay, so a state of equilibrium gets achieved only when they see that it's in at par. So if you can see here, Adam's equity theory says that. So these are the inputs and outputs here, and this is how they find the balance here. Okay, so they analyze what they have brought into the organization, and what they are taking from the organization. So what brings to the organization? They bring the skill, they bring the knowledge, they bring the attitude. They bring a requisite amount of skill, knowledge, and attitude to the organization, and they find the balance between that. And what are they taking from the organization? What are the rewards? What are the recognitions? Am I achieving the desired outcomes that I have? So this is the way they map their things. Okay, that's why it's called as equity theory. They map it versus inputs and outputs and compared to the results and outcomes that they have achieved. So dissonance arises when the ratio is unequal, okay, as we mentioned. So the form of anger when perceived undervalued, because they feel there's a lot of unrest which happens when they perceive that they have been undervalued. And there's a guilt when perceived as overvalued. Okay, if they feel that it has been overvalued and their inputs were not as much, they will feel again stretched. So Adams proposed that the negative state of dissonance motivate people to act to eliminate it and set an equity. So as per the theory, there can be four referent comparisons: self-insight, self-outside, other-inside, and other-outside. Okay, so these are the four referent comparisons that they have. Equity theory, what points of reference a person uses depends on the available information about the referent and its attractiveness to the person. And four moderating variables affecting the choice of referent and comparison standards in terms of gender, in terms of length of service, level in the position that they have in the organization, the amount of education and the professionalism. Okay, so based on the equity theory, people experience inequity tends to choose one of the six choices that are there. So these are some of the choices that they have with them. Okay, one is, the first is change inputs. What are the inputs that they will invest or they will provide to be able to make the change? What are the outcomes of change? either they will distort the perceptions of self or they will distort the perception of others. And they will choose, or they will choose a different referent altogether, or they will completely leave the field. So based on the equity theory, people who experience inequity, whenever they find that there is no equilibrium, they tend to choose one of these choices. These are there in front. They will change the inputs, they because they realize there's no equilibrium, there's no satisfaction. What they will do is they'll change the expectant input as well. So they will change the outcome sometimes. They could distort the perceptions of self and others. They might choose a different referent altogether, or they may completely leave the field. Now, other contemporary motivation theories are interactional justice. What do you mean by that? Interactional justice describes a person's view of the level to which he or she is treated with dignity, concern, and respect. So that's what is interactional justice. Okay, so there are three forms of justice, interactional, distributive, and procedural. Distributive justice, that is mostly related to satisfaction and commitment of organization. And it depends on the outcomes like salary. Okay, so that's what is distributive justice is all about. They completely relate with the satisfaction and the commitment of the organization with them, which means the kind of salaries that they're paying. So these are how it is looked at. So appropriateness of the treatment of one receives from authority figures. So this is your interpersonal justice and this is your informational justice. So interpersonal justice means treating an employee with enough dignity, courtesy and respect. Informational justice means how the way you are disseminating the information, the sharing the relevant information with employees. So now comes your expectancy theory. So expectancy theory completely based on three parameters here: effort versus performance versus reward. Now, what is the effort that I'm putting? I am expected to bring in a certain performance. For that, I am putting X amount of effort and I am expecting an X plus one amount of reward. Okay, so effort, the employee believes that effort will result in. So there is an extrinsic motivation always already in place, which means he has an expectation that for the effort that he will put in, it will result into an acceptable performance. So performance will achieve. The employee believes that acceptable performance will produce the employee believes that, you know, if I perform well, if I bring in the results, I will definitely get rewarded. And the reward, the employee values the reward. Okay, so that's what is your, it's completely based on the expectancy theory, expectation in their mind. I'm putting an effort, I'm bringing in results, so I should be rewarded. Very, very simple and categoric. I will put in my effort, I have an expectancy of getting a reward, my performance getting highlighted and visible. The employee believes that acceptable performance obviously will bring out results. And as an employee, I will value that reward. So practically, it means that people tend to be motivated for exerting high level of effort only when they expect it will result in good performance and good appraisal or good bonuses, leading to rewards such as increments, elevation, bonuses, all of that. Okay, so which means it's very clear that in expectancy theory that people will only put in efforts when they expect a certain level of, when they are sure that they will get a certain rewards like elevation, they might get a promotion, they might get reward, they might get an exorbitant bonus, all of that. This theory involves three relationships: effort performance relationship, performance reward relationship, and rewards personal goals relationship. Okay, these are the three relationships: effort performance, performance and reward, rewards and personal goals relationship. So if I put in, so to understand it better, so typically it's like, first, if I put in a maximum effort, will it be recognized in my performance appraisal? I'm putting an X amount of effort here and that is maximum from my side. But am I going to be noticed? Is it going to be spoken about in the performance appraisal process? Second, if I get a good performance appraisal, will it lead to organizational rewards? So performance appraisal mil gaya mujhe, out of 5 I have been scored as 4, which is an above average. So will it lead to rewards? Will it get me bonus? Will it get me a promotion? Finally, if I'm rewarded, are the rewards attractive to me? Is it motivating me enough? So these are the three things that they will look at in an expectancy theory. If I'm putting my maximum amount, will it be noticed in the, will it be highlighted or recognized in my performance appraisal? Second is if it is a good performance appraisal, will it lead to organizational rewards? And if at all rewards are being given, are these rewards attractive enough? In all the above situations, people's motivation is not maximized. Expectancy theory is a widely accepted contemporary theory. Despite it has been criticized and it has been in use, being limited and its validity is more only where people are able to clearly view effort, performance and performance reward relationships. So wherever there is no clarity, you cannot see success story there. Such cases are few and is argued by the critics that rendering the theory is highly idealistic. So motivating by job design. So when you use the job description model, the five core characteristics of a job design are skill variety, variety of skills that you have, okay? It's not only that only one particular skill is getting utilized. Skill variety, task identity, what is the task that you identify with? What is the significance of your task that you are doing? Is it automatized? Does it have autonomy? Do you have freedom to work? And do you get regular feedback? So according to JCM, any job can be described in terms of these five core dimensions. Variety of skill, task identity, task significance, freedom, which is autonomy, and feedback. So all dimensions can be combined into a single predictive index as well. All these five dimensions can be combined into a single predictive index, PI, called the motivating potential scores, which is called as MPS, and can be calculated as follows. MPS is equal to meaningfulness of work into autonomy into feedback. So that's the formula that they use. What is MPS? Meaningfulness of your work multiplied by autonomy of your work and the feedback of your work. Meaningful, so skill variety. So meaningfulness of your work meaning the variety of skills that you're using. Autonomy means the task identity. Are you able to do that on your own or are you dependent on others? And the feedback, which is your significance. So meaningfulness of your work will bring skill variety plus task identity plus the task significance. So anything to do with your skill and the task is what is your meaning of your work. And meaningfulness of your work, and with this you multiply autonomy and feedback to get your MPS score. Keeping motivation in mind, this model proposes that people receive intrinsic rewards when, motivating by job design, it's been believed that people receive intrinsic rewards. But remember those intrinsic reward motivators? They learn, that means they have knowledge of results. They personally have performed well, means I myself have done well on a task. So which means I have experienced responsibly, I have experienced accountably. They care about the task and the outcome, that is experienced meaningfulness. So redesigning the jobs for higher motivation, job rotation, job enrichment and alternative work arrangements are practical applications of JCM. Okay, so job rotation. To avoid excessive routinization of job, to avoid monopoly of doing a similar kind of a job all the time, a monotony needs to be get rid of, and people needs to be given a variety of jobs. So people may be shifted from one task to the other requiring similar skills and at the similar organizational level. So they won't move from position, they would be in the same contemporary position, but they might have a different set of skills, probably similar skills, but different ambience, a different team to work on, different work to do. This is termed as your job rotation. This aids in reducing boredom. This enhances your employee motivation. It builds employee understanding of their work and it also contributes to the organizational goals. So motivating by job design, the job description model. So the job enrichment, the degree to which a work requires working closely with other people. Okay, is it just a job which is monotonous and just working by your own self? The degree to which, so feedback from others. So first is your degree to which work requires working closely with other people, which means how do you deal with others? Autonomy, the degree to which a job provides freedom, interdependence and discretion of the employees in scheduling and determining the work. feedback from the job, the degree to which the job itself provides direct information that you clearly gets to know that what you're contributing, you know, what are your contributions from your job. So feedback from others, the degree to which the employee receives clear feedback from supervisors and co-workers that this is where we did well, this is where we have scope for improvement, this is where we definitely did need to work hard, all of that will come under. So these are the four parameters when you talk about the job enrichment: autonomy, dealing with others, feedback from the job, feedback from others. The few elements that work here together under job design is alternative work arrangements. In case of diverse workforce, these may be effective in enhancing job satisfaction and thereby motivation. Such diverse workforce may include dual career couples, single parents, people caring for sick or aging family member. All these kind of arrangements are being diverse workforce are being managed, and they make it inclusive. Flexi time. Under this work arrangement, people are required to work certain number of hours per week but have the flexibility to vary it from their timing. For example, you need to work 48 hours a week. You may decide whether you want to do it in 3 days and complete it. You cannot extend beyond 99 hours, but you may complete that in 6 days, or you may complete that in 5 days or 4 days as well by extending it. So the idea is to complete the number of hours. Usually 6 hours should be minimum that they work on every flexibility band. Telecommuting. This is described as working at home for minimum 2 days in a week on a computer connected to workplace. This is not something which has developed now. This has been in practice for quite some time by many organizations. Okay, so they allow work from home for 2 to 3 days in a week. Some of the well-known organizations who are practicing this already, they are AT&T, IBM, American Express, Sun Microsystems, they are already following this. For individuals, telecommunicating can lead to greater flexibility and job satisfaction, and may come close to an ideal job for some. So some people might just find this ideal, and they would just get married to this job, and they will continue to produce results and to be able to greater happiness being associated with this brand because of the kind of flexibility and the arranged work arrangements that they have. Motivating by employee involvement. Employee involvement refers to various participated processes that happens. Okay, so there are two major forms of employee participation or involvement. One is your participative management, where you ask your employees, you incorporate your team members' views and opinions, and you allows representative participation. There are two ways. Participative management, where you incorporate their ideas and their participation. One is that you allow them to represent. So it's a participative management is a joint decision-making program where employees possess a significant amount of decision-making authority along with their managers. And participative management, in case of a participative management, what happens is you employees to have the requisite competence and knowledge for making a fruitful contribution to decision-making. So obviously, participative management will be done only with those employees who have substantial amount of knowledge and skills to be able to contribute in the decision-making process. Representative participation, the objective of this is to redistribute power within an organization, which means decentralization of power. Ensuring employees get an equal footing through a representation of a small group of employees in decision-making process so that employees get a hang of decision-making. Okay, maybe a small group, okay, but they get a representation. The two most common forms are work council and board representatives. I'm sure most of you must have have heard about these two kind of work groups which exist within organizations. Evidence suggests that very little efficacy of representative management in increasing motivation and thereby organizational performance. So it does not represent too much of efficacy here. But however, these are some of the motivating ways to by improving employee involvement. Relationship between employee involvement programs and motivation. Employee involvement uses various motivation theories. Theory Y, which is basically positive links to participative management, and Theory X, which is basically negative links to more autocratic management styles. So these are some of the employee involvement processes used for developing motivation. So Theory X, Theory Y. So the Theory X says, as we have learned in the earlier slides, the average employee is lazy, dislikes work, and will naturally not produce results Whereas theory Y, employees are not inherently lazy. Given a chance, the employees will do what is good for the organization. In theory X, to ensure that employees work hard, managers should closely supervise. In the theory Y, it's completely opposite. It says that to allow employees to work in full autonomy, the managers must create a work setting that provides opportunities for workers to exercise initiative and self-direction. So they should be self-directed enough. Nobody should watch them. It should be intrinsic to them to be able to contribute to the organization. So as per theory X, it says managers should create strict work rules, whereas in theory Y, it says managers should decentralize authority to the employees and ask them to decide, ask them what they want to put it, ask them to choose collectively. So this is what is one of the different way of employee involvement. Motivating through use of salary. Salary may not be the primary factor leading to job satisfaction, but it does motivate a lot of people to perform. Many people who are breadwinners of the family, they consider one sole motivation, which is the money. And some people believes in money being the power. So they say the more the money, the better is the lifestyle, and hence I will put in more efforts. Many times organization underestimates its strength to retain the top talent. Even if organizations recognize its importance, they face various questions in terms of deciding. They will lead to job satisfaction and thereby motivate them to perform. Okay, so if you aid the salary, you'll definitely see results. So this is the same, the use of salary. Rewarding through variable pay programs. This is very, very common nowadays. In most of the organizations now, they have moved towards pay for performance. So there is a fixed amount of salary for your every month, which is for you to perform the role effectively. To do something extra is something that you get extra, which is called as your variable pay. So all the people who are high potentials are always get paid much more than your average workers. Such programs include piece rate plans, merit-based plans, merit-based pay, bonuses, profit sharing, you know, ESOPs, those kind of things, employee stock, which is called as employee stock ownership plans. All these are being shared amongst the employees for which aids towards performances. So for this, they will put in their best foot forward and achieve results. Rewarding to variable pay programs, we've spoken about that. Then we talk about developing a flexible benefit package. Again, part of your salary gets non-taxable package, which allows you to, aids you to save on the tax to quite a big amount. So that also aids to motivation. A flexible benefit package does away with the one benefit plan fits all. Again, one size fit all concept goes in. So everybody can pick and choose from the flexi basket. And they can, depending on the marital status that they have, depending on the family that they have, depending on the dependencies that they have, they can choose to invest on a certain, they can choose to adopt a certain package and accordingly put their salary computation. So there is three most popular types of benefit plans: modular plans, core plus options, and flexible spending accounts. Recognition programs. There is an increased use of contribution recognition programs to motivate people. This is constant. Globally, organizations have created central programs across various locations, makes employee feel valued, irrespective of the work location. No matter where he's located, immediate campaigns will happen. Immediate instant gratifications would be given on social media, or immediate vouchers are being given for the extraordinary performances. All these kind of reward programs are your instant motivation. Through the use of virtual teams, how do you actually motivate virtual teams? Managing organizations through virtual teams and projects have become the reality because teams and their associated projects are no longer limited by geographical and physical boundaries. Nobody has a physical boundary now. Anybody can operate from anybody. And there is no restriction of a location nowadays. Though Indian companies are still yet to far away to kind of accept that norm. However, globally, they do not mind where the person is coming from as long as he brings the skill sets that is required by the organization. So global projects with virtual teams have emerged as the vehicle by which the cost and duration of projects can be reduced. People issues often tend to be the most frustrating aspect of virtual teams. Don't you think so? People issues can be most frustrating at times when it's virtually operating. They also are complicated as each person who is a part of the team may have a specific personal agenda to fulfill along with their assigned roles. Another concern is that people are assigned to virtual teams. people are assigned to the virtual team. So the team is completely virtual and you're assigned to that team. You do not have seen, you do not have touch and feel of the team. Are you not, you know, you're not even interacting on a regular basis when they would prefer to work on other initiatives or on other projects. Okay, so you don't know what to do. So it becomes a little challenging there. So so people are assigned to virtual teams. So that could be one of the. So motivation in virtual teams, you can see this graphic here. I don't think it is too visible to you. But these are some of the tips for managing your virtual team. 66% of multinational companies makes extensive use of virtual teams. Make communication easier. Use different kinds of platforms, Yammer, this, that. So many platforms are there to be able to communicate effectively within the organization. Open up data access, make things available on cloud so that people do not have to hunt for data. Meet regularly as much as possible. Meeting doesn't mean physically meet, but meeting over platforms is fine. Meeting on Zoom, meeting on Teams. Include them in company news, you know, whenever possible, include them. And utilize the cloud-based project management tools. So these are the some five tips of managing your virtual workforce. So as a manager, how do you motivate virtual teams? It is critical to understand each team member's hidden agendas, okay? Everybody has got their hidden need and recognition aspiration. So what must be done to create the stage for a successful virtual team from the outset is that the manager must ensure that the client's measures of success in terms of the triple constraint are met. And this further must be done in an extremely stressful environment that is dynamic and noted by continuous change. What is the importance of focusing on motivation? Therefore, project manager must focus on motivation. It is a critical element of any high performance project team. If it's a high performance project team, they need to be motivated enough regardless of whether their team is, you know, collaborated together or is it virtual or they're working together. Groups only become teams when they come up with disciplined action. That's what Katzenbach and Smith have said in 1923. Motivation is a concept that is difficult to describe. It cannot be described in few words. It is used throughout organizational theory and human resource management. One definition of it is that comes to my mind straight away is that a process, action, or intervention that serves as an incentive for a project team member to take the necessary action to complete a task within the appropriate confines and scope of performance, time, and cost. So this describes a complete life cycle of an individual who wants to contribute, who is motivated enough to be able to contribute to the larger view of the organization. It is important to ask the right questions to gain the understanding. As a result, the project manager must use a variety of motivational approaches that are specific to each team. So each team would be different, as I mentioned to you, for what is motivating for you may not be motivating for me. So hence, they have to use specific motivational practices for each team member as appropriate to help ensure the project goes for a success. Thank you so much.